Part deux.
Of
the Menendez brothers.
Yes.
The story is crazy, and I don't remember as much as I thought I would, because I've heard of it before.
Yeah, same.
It's highly covered in, like, the true crime arena, but I did not, I don't know if I just, put it on and wasn't paying attention or what, but there's a lot to this.
Yeah, there is. It's very detailed.
It sounded like towards the end of last episode, that was it, you know?
Nope, I am so a little bit over halfway.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Very interested to see what happens. If you have anything to send us, you can email us at shotofcrime@gmail.com. And other than that, we don't have a producer once again, so we're just going to jump in and hope for the best.
I feel like we're doing a pretty good job. I'm checking the email right now just in case.
Oh, no, live.
One day we're going to log in and there's going to be like 5 million. And today's not that day.
What if it's like we find out they all went to spam or something and we have all of these emails?
That'd be so bad.
Like, stop yelling at us. We're emailing you. No, it's fine.
Oh my gosh, I just got so excited, and it's freaking literally spam, because I clicked on our spam, and there's an email from Miss Anna James. It looks like a real person, and it's not. I'm so sad. I just got so excited.
That's all good.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get into the other half of the Menendez brothers. Yeah, make sure to listen to the
I will say, episode. If you email us, we might send you something cool.
Ooh.
So, what do you have to lose?
Yeah, that'd be fun. So, we left off on the last story, on the last episode. The boys are just kind of spending, going crazy, having the time of their lives, buying condos, just living their best life. Mm. And so, detectives were finally starting to catch on. They started realizing that the two of them had a huge financial motive for committing this crime.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know how you don't know that, especially if you looked into any of it and you noticed that Eric made a screenplay about killing a kid, killing parents.
The buying expensive things before the funeral, after the funeral. Like, it's pretty
I don't know how, like, it seemed late to catch on only after 6 months, especially if you're continually investigating who did it. It's not like it was just like a cold case.
I think,
like,
maybe in the moment they fooled them because they seem sincerely like upset. And then it's like that thing of you don't want to be wrong.
So you're like,
no, I don't think they did this.
And if you think there's any chance they didn't, it's like you're putting kids of parents who were just murdered in more trauma. Like, I get that. It's just.
Yeah, I think that's why just from the beginning, it's just, hey, this is just part of the process.
Yeah, we just
Everyone close to them is investigated. And that should be the norm. And it's stressful and it's hard on those people that have been through stuff, but that happens all the time.
Yeah.
Like spouses,
yeah,
kids,
and if anything, it's like you, as the kids, you would want to be helpful, I would assume, in trying to find who killed your parents.
Well, and I think that's the way that you communicate it, because if it's like, hey, we're investigating you, but this is just showing you that we're taking this seriously and
we're
looking
into
it. Find who did this. And if I'm sitting there innocent, it's going to be overwhelming and hard. Like, it's not going to be an easy process, but it's also, if I have nothing to hide, you know, it's kind of.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. The longer the time went on, the boys seemed less and less interested in the investigation. They would never call and check in to see if they were any closer to figuring out who killed their parents. So they looked a little closer at the boys, and that's when they realized that they had purchased guns on August 18th. Two days before their parents were killed. I do not know. They used a stolen ID to purchase the guns, and then they brought them home. Then they found out that the boys had also hired a computer expert to completely erase their father's hard drive. This was important because they believed that Jose had the most updated version of his will on the computer. So, like, they and it's another, like, motive, because you know your dad just updated this will to maybe you're not getting anything, or maybe you're like, and so they're like, oh, shoot. Police ended up talking with Eric's friend, Craig, who was the one that he played tennis with, and they were working on writing that script together. And they asked him to go to lunch with Eric, and he did. It was November 17th. He asked him to go to lunch, and they did like normal, but Eric seemed very nervous, very anxious. But Craig kept kind of poking at him, asking, what's going on? Why are you acting weird? And eventually, Eric confessed everything to Craig. He really trusted Craig, and he told him how the plan was for Lau to shoot his dad and how he was tasked with shooting his mom. He explained, though, that he couldn't do it and he could not bring himself to actually shoot his mom. So Lau shot his mom as well, but they did not have a recording device for this lunch. Rookie mistake. Mm-hmm. Especially if you asked Craig to go have lunch with them. So they asked Craig to go with Eric, get lunch with Eric again and get the confession out of him again. This time wearing the recording device. He wore a wire, and then he also had a calculator with a recording device inside that he was holding underneath the table. Craig asked him again about how he killed his parents, but this time he denied it. He said that they didn't do it. He explained that he should never have told Craig that and that it was made up and Lau never killed anybody. Like, clearly you can tell Lau went back to, I mean, Eric went back to Lau, told him like, oh shoot, I told Craig. And then Lau was just like, you got to go tell him that you didn't do it. So then they started talking to the family's therapist. Kitty was in therapy as well. And it turns out that Kitty actually told her therapist that she was afraid of her sons, that she thought that they were sociopaths, which is like, whoa, Kitty. It turns out that she was so afraid of them that she was locking herself in her bedroom at night. After the murder first happened, Eric continued to see his therapist, Dr. Ozeal, which she was like ordered to do that because of the whole thing. And according to Dr. Ozeal, around this time, the stress and anxiety was really taking a toll on Eric. In fact, he was getting ulcers from all of the stress. They have really casual therapy sessions. Dr. Ozeal thought he could really break through to him by just having like normal sessions and then like getting deeper and deeper. He was kind of sensing that they may have been involved. During one of their sessions, they ended up just walking in a park. They had a very casual chat, and then they went back to Dr. Ozeal's office. When they got there, Eric just leans up against a parking meter and casually says, "We did it." Dr. Ozeal was shocked, and he brought him into his office and had him explain the whole story. This is where Eric explained that after they murdered their parents, they changed into clean clothes. They dumped their shotguns up the road. They went to the movie theater to get a ticket as their alibi for the night. Poor Eric is just like freaking out at this point. Like, he's just like unraveling. I bet you his brother is like pissed. That's so stressful. Especially if Eric feels like Lau, like, it seems like this is a situation where Lau was like not forcing him to, but feeding him so much, like, we're like probably like, we're so unhappy. Like,
that, I feel like that's kind of, in my opinion, that's how he's trying to play it. But I keep going back to the screenplay, and he definitely has, I feel like, another side to him. I think he's trying to play it like, my brother's the mastermind, I just got caught up in this, whatever. I don't think he's that innocent. Like,
I don't think he's that innocent, but I don't know that if Lau didn't like plan everything, that Eric would have done it.
It seems like he kind of outlined it, though. That's Eric? What I'm talking about with the screenplay.
Oh, with the screenplay.
That's what I'm saying, is I feel like he kind of sparked this, and it probably was something that he fantasized about, thought about, whatever. And then Lau
actually said,
it.
Let's do it.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, he's also partaking in like purchasing stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah. For
I just feel like if you're considering the screenplay and the fact that he has a history in acting and all of that,
that's true.
He probably knows, he's probably smart enough to try to play the angle of the younger brother who's just like got caught up in this.
Yeah.
And that might even be why he got quote unquote cold feet. Like, he might be like, I'm going to just put this on him. I just, it's not always what it seems like. If he's smart about it and he's caught up in it and he wants this to happen, that's a great way to play it on him.
Yeah,
you just like
wrong.
Freak out and like act like you can't do it.
That's true.
I don't know. I don't feel bad for him.
No, I get that. So Dr. Ozeal tells Eric to call Lau and have him meet him at the office, which Lau had no idea at that point that Eric had just confessed everything. So he came and met him there, and he was just going to talk to them, coach them, be there for them, try to play it casual. But he was secretly going to be recording the session. Mm-hmm. He decided that he was going to have his mistress at the time actually stand outside of the door and listen just in case anything crazy happened while he was talking to them. She was ready to call the police at any time. When Lau found out, which kind of just outed Dr. Ozeal.
Yeah.
When Lau found out that Eric had spilled everything to Dr. Ozeal, he was obviously very angry. This was not part of the plan. They were supposed to get away with this. And he actually ended up threatening to kill Dr. Ozeal if he told anyone. Instead of going to the police right away, he continued to see the brothers, which is so dumb for me. It seems like it's almost like this is something for you. You're not actually trying to help. Because if you're like continually, yeah.
And he knows if he goes to the police, that kind of cuts off his involvement. Like his, and I feel like he was just curious about it.
Yeah. So bad. He continued to have several sessions with them and he recorded all of it. They began talking about the murders in more detail. Dr. Ozil was just keeping all of this information until the day that his mistress, her name was Judalon, actually went to the police and gave them the information. She said that she did this because Dr. Ozil was abusive to her and she wanted to get revenge on him. It's like two completely different storylines happening. Like, what's going on?
That's a good reason to reveal murderers.
Yeah, that's also just terrifying for her to be in the office knowing that these two guys like killed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Police got a subpoena for the tapes, went and seized them from the safety deposit box that Dr. Ozil had in a bank on Ventura Boulevard. They got word that Lyle might flee the state over this and that he was terrified of getting caught. So they decided that they couldn't waste any time. On March 8th, 1990, over a dozen police officers stopped him as he was pulling out of his driveway, Lyle. They had him get out of the vehicle, laid on the ground, face down. They handcuffed him and took him into the police station. Eric at the time was actually at a tennis tournament in Israel. According to police who were around him, when he got the call, he was crying hysterically. He ended up flying to Miami, where several of his relatives lived. And then his aunt convinced him to fly back to LA and turn himself in. He surrendered. Good job. Good job, aunt. He surrendered at LAX on March 11th, 1990. They wasted no time. The charges were filed against the boys the next day. But it was weird because during their arraignment, the boys didn't look that worried. They came into the Beverly Hills courtroom in fancy outfits and smiling. They seemed very confident. When people found out that the Menendez brothers had been charged with killing their parents, friends and family couldn't believe it. Some of their family members supported them still, though, which is insane to me.
No.
It's in the blood. It's like Jose was. They sat in the front row at trial. Their tennis coach sat in the front row, and Eric's girlfriend, even their grandma, sat in the front row. So they were all kind of supporting him.
No.
Jose's mother, the grandma, she always believed that the boys were innocent. Like,
what?
She's never like thought that they had done anything.
I mean,
Jose's mom. Are we surprised?
It's one of those my kid would never.
Like. Literally. Literally.
Wow. All right.
At their arraignment, the judge explained to them that they were both being charged with killing their parents for financial gain and that they could be facing the death penalty, and asked them how they plead. Both of them said not guilty. So the defense and prosecution spent a lot of time arguing over whether or not the tapes that Dr. Ozil had recorded could be admissible in court. They were saying, is it fair game because they're murderers, or does it fall under doctor-patient confidentiality?
No, I'm pretty sure if you break a law, that goes out the window.
That's what I thought, which apparently maybe it had updated and since then. But the Supreme Court of California made the decision that two out of the three tapes were able to be used in court.
Okay.
One of the tapes had Lau's confession on it. They determined that because Lau had threatened Dr. Ozil's life, it forfeits his right to the doctor-patient confidentiality. And maybe it's been updated, but like I would have thought, regardless of him threatening.
I mean, at least in Florida, if you're breaking a law or threatening someone in some way, or admitting to threatening someone, which murder would fall under.
Yeah.
That goes out the window.
That's like, what I thought. Maybe because this was in the 90s at this point, probably. It wasn't updated. Going into the trial, they knew that now that those tapes were going to be fair game, they couldn't pretend that the boys didn't commit the crime because they pled not guilty, but now they have literal proof. They were going to have a different strategy. So in July of 93, it was announced for the first time ever that Eric and Lyle had actually killed their parents in self-defense after a lifetime of psychological, physical, and sexual abuse at the hands of their father, and that they killed their mother as well because she allowed it to happen. So this is where the rest of the story goes and why there's much more information.
Okay.
Because they took, once they found out, shoot, like they have proof that we did it, we kind of have to come up with a different story. And so they went like completely the opposite way and said, we're the victims, and basically like trying to pull a.
That's hard too, because that's such a hard thing to prove.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the trial took so long, because it was such a back and forth. When this came out, the media went wild. There were so many opinions. Many people felt bad for the boys and believed them. Many people thought it was purely a defense strategy. So the trial began 10 days later. They tried both of them separately. They had two different defense teams, two different juries. And normally they do these at different times, but they decided to do their trials at the same time. Mm. It was being covered extensively. It was kind of half and half. People believed they were innocent. Some people believed they were guilty. Eric's friend Craig ended up talking to the media a lot. He did an interview. He did any interview he could. Because he had did the screenplay where literally it's what they were talking about, he felt like he was kind of getting a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. But because he did that, it seemed like they planned the murder, and the media kind of portrayed Lyle as the older, more dominant brother that convinced Eric to go along with his plan. They actually made the decision to broadcast the whole trial live on TV for people to watch, which I didn't watch it in its entirety, but I actually do want to go back and watch the whole thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Their grandmother, Maria Menendez, continued to support the boys throughout the entire trial. She didn't even think the boys actually killed their parents, which is crazy because at that point they had literally said, we killed our parents, but it was because of self-defense. So for the grandmother to literally be like, no, I don't think they did it. It's like, you're on a whole nother level of delusion.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's rough.
She still believed that theory that someone from the mob did it.
And they're covering for the mob? Or
yeah.
Like, okay.
So when Eric and Lyle walked into the courtroom for their first day of trial, they did not look how they did at the arraignment hearing. Their smiles were gone, and they seemed worn down, tired, exhausted. They had lost a lot of weight. They were very pale. They looked very depressed during the proceedings. They just sat there staring blankly ahead. They also had a really hard time in jail. Other prisoners apparently hated them, and they had to pay for protection in jail, which they had the money for, but they were definitely like the like annoying brats that all the other prisoners were like, you guys have been like sheltered your whole life and like all that. So the prosecution argued that Eric and Lyle killed their parents in order to get financial gain and that they should get the death penalty. The defense sought to prove that they were abused, that they were in danger, and they had to kill their parents or their parents could have killed them, which is a very, like, it's just very extreme. Eric's defense attorney, whose name was Leslie.
Yeah, you're also not talking about some kind of dispute. You're talking about them eating ice cream. Like, you're premeditating it and ambushing them.
Like, when they're just chilling. Like,
this isn't like a scuffle and it's. Someone was going to die and it was self-defense.
Yeah, because they claimed self-defense. And in my mind, it's like you would think like, oh, they're literally training.
Yeah, self-defense.
But I think they meant like future-wise self-defense.
Yeah,
they were going to kill
us. Even
if
like your, you know, say your spouse is abusing you. If you aren't defending yourself in a moment of abuse.
Yeah.
And you like you.
You just kill them.
Yeah. You even though logically you can understand how someone gets there, that's
it's still wrong.
Not self-defense. Like,
yeah,
they would just say you should have left. Like in the court of law,
yes,
like
it doesn't translate. So Eric's defense attorney, Leslie Abramson, who is a well-known advocate against the death penalty. Mm-hmm. And she also took high profile criminal cases. She was obviously the best money could buy. They could afford the best. Right. She was known for being very tough and a force to be reckoned with in the courtroom. She'd break down people until they cried on the witness stand.
Yeah, being on the witness stand, even if you've done nothing,
yeah,
and you're just there
stressful.
To attest, they dig up so much.
I'm like, sure that's so stressful. Especially with the, like, it seems like this lady was just very.
And they just twist things to try to make you
like mess up in your head.
Anything they can do to make you seem not reliable or unstable. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it has anything to do with what your claim is. It's just stressful. Mm-hmm. I hope never to have to.
Yeah, I agree.
It's to the point where, like, I mean, I would definitely report something if I saw it, but there's a part of me that's like, can I just act like I didn't see that so I don't have to.
No.
The court process is daunting.
Oh, I'm sure. Especially like a high profile case like this. Like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. But to clarify, I absolutely would report it. I'm just saying there's that natural part of a human that's like, oh, this is going to be a big.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. A lot of people think that Leslie purposely dressed the boys a specific way to make them seem younger. Instead of suits, they wore sweaters.
I was going to say, I was looking up at the pictures. I was looking at pictures. They look like high schoolers.
Yeah, because they're wearing like these colorful like high school sweaters. Like it's like the like uniforms that you would see back then.
Yeah, and it makes you more sympathetic.
Yeah, for sure. She argued that even though the boys seemed like they had a perfect life on the outside, that truly their lives at home were absolute hell. She argued that they were traumatized by all of the abuse, including sexual abuse, that they had gotten from their father. They described it all in court. It was very graphic, very shocking. She explained that Jose would abuse the boys and Kitty would just watch and allow it to happen, never standing up for them. She said Jose was a cruel perfectionist whose image was everything to him, that he didn't really care much about his kids. She argued that he would be the type that would rather kill his kids than have the truth about their family come out. Which is the one statement that she says that I'm actually like, I can see that.
You can see, and you can see how he could have just been not a great person, or he could have been like a monster. Like, you can see how he could be that person. The hard part about a defense is they can say anything.
Yeah, they literally
and
can.
That's, you saw that in the Casey Anthony case. Yep. Like, they tried to say her dad. Like, it's one of those things where it's like you have no burden of proof, so you can just make claims. And the only thing that I've always felt is if it is a situation where you're just throwing it out, these people are dead and you're completely putting this out there into the world.
And if that wasn't the proof,
like, well, and it doesn't matter if there's proof, it's out there and there's going to be a group of people that believe it.
Oh yeah.
And this is a person that's been murdered and
they have no, there's no chance for them to like be like, no, I didn't. Well, and this next part is even crazier because, and this could be true, but
right,
like you
said. And that's the thing is if it was true, it's like, oh my gosh, yes, tell it. Yeah. Like, that is awful. It's just, it's so
there's no
hard
way of knowing. Yep. So she explained that Kitty was living in hell as well. Apparently to what she said she was an alcoholic. She was a drug addict and she was pretty depressed over her husband having all of these affairs that she knew about. So like what you said, like it seemed like everybody else thought she was this perfect mom. And she could have been, but like now it's this painted picture that she was an alcoholic and a drug addict.
Was like to me, and I think actions sometimes speak louder than words. Like all of the support she gave, like going to their stuff, and it seemed like she was really like supportive of them.
Yeah,
which who knows what happens behind closed doors. But I feel like that shows kind of her nurturing, like
that's what I thought. Motherly. And obviously, like, you know, you don't know what happens at home, but like everybody that was ever around her or knew her, like no one had anything bad to say about her.
Yeah. I mean, there's things that happen and people have no idea. It's not to say that. It's just one of those things that's hard to speak to when it could literally go either way. And
yeah. But also there was nothing to like, if you were to tell me, oh, she got into car accidents, like she was very aggressive towards people. Like if you told me like things, like certain things that she would do that could be like, she could be an alcoholic, she could be a drug addict. Yeah. But like her, and nothing she did was like out of the
There's a lot of people in the wealthy arena that are addicted to pills or like
very
high functioning. So to me, that's not even if her husband wasn't cheating or awful or whatever.
Oh yeah.
I just feel like that's kind of a norm of that life. But I think jumping from that to she was complicit in her husband abusing the kids and just sat there is that's a big jump.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And not to say it didn't happen, but that's a big, whatever assumptions you want to make about him and like the patterns in his life, like for a mom to do that, that's a lot to say.
Yeah. And if it's not true, it's like, that's so sad for her. Yeah. They also said that Kitty was so upset, so distressed that she was a hazard to herself. She was a terrible housekeeper and pretty much a bad mom and a suicidal mess all behind closed doors, which could be true, but could be not.
What does her housekeeping have to do with anything?
It's like the perfect like house mom. You know what I mean? It's like the perfect housewife. She explained that their life was totally out of control. It was nothing like it seemed. According to her, it was even messy in the house when they were growing up. There were often feces around the house from their pet ferret. They also had a dog, and apparently the dog would go to the bathroom on the carpet. So it was just messy all over the place. She's like trying to paint this like picture though. Like she's getting so intense. Yeah. They also brought up that Lau had this pet rabbit when he was growing up. And one morning he woke up and the head was bashed in. And she said that Jose and Kitty did this together. I just don't see that.
So he woke up, went to his parents, and his parents said, oh, we did this together. Like, how, unless he saw this, which yeah. he's not saying he did.
Like, it's just weird. It's like, right. you're making up stories, or Lal is saying that he saw this, or like, you know, and she's just going with that. I don't know. It just seems
it's
like hard. A lot.
I mean, it's that the difficulty when you're talking about how much can you trust murderers, mm-hmm. like yeah, in their word.
Exactly.
It's not to say, like, don't believe someone who's claiming they were abused or in a bad situation, but these people have shown, like, they're murderers.
So yeah, like, are we going to trust them?
Can we... I don't know.
And at this point, if it's already been out there that you murdered people and that's been confirmed, what do you have to lose to lie? Oh, you know what I mean? It's like, you're going to try for anything.
Times, and I mean, Casey Anthony has said, to go back to her, like, she didn't even... approve of where they went with
that
her dad.
That is true.
So
that's true.
A lot of times it's the defense and it's not even.
And
like,
this lady seems like she's just cutthroat and will say anything.
Yeah. I mean, because you're in the courtroom and she can say whatever she wants. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
Like, exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's very hard to know what to believe in this. I'm glad I'm not on that jury.
Yeah. Lau was so traumatized apparently by all of this that he wet the bed until he was 14. This is another disturbing thing, but Lau claims that they would take the sheets off the bed after he would wet the bed and put them on the breakfast table in the morning and make him sit and look at them to shame him, which is very extreme. And I could see Lau like exaggerating something, but another story that I'm also like, I could see it happening. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
With the like perfectionist type of standard.
It's just weird. Also, they claim that Kitty had blamed the boys for her not being able to have a successful career in broadcasting. They even said that she had threatened to poison them at one point, so they were very afraid of her. Then they made a really shocking claim and said that Kitty had been giving Eric genital exams every year until he was 15. So remember how I talked about how he was balding at 15 and they made him wear the toupee? The week before she was murdered, Kitty apparently ripped off his toupee in a fight. And that's how Eric found out that his brother was bald. He didn't even know. Wow. Apparently that was like a breaking point for them. Like that's when he was like, this family has so many secrets and it's just so intense. The two of them started discussing how their family was so toxic after that event. Eric started telling Lau everything that his father had been doing to him for years. And when Lau found out that had been happening to his brother, he apparently threatened his dad to stop. And he said if he didn't, they would go to the public. But Jose allegedly responded and said, he's my son. I'll do whatever I want with him. That's when they said that the boys knew that they had to do something because they were afraid of their dad. They decided to have both of the brothers give testimonies at their trials.
Wow, that's bold.
Mm-hmm. They gave a very graphic descriptions of all the sexual abuse that both of them had endured. They recounted all of this on the stand in front of everybody in court, and oftentimes they were hysterically crying throughout their interviews. The public had very little sympathy for the boys. They were widely not believed at this point. Mm. In fact, they were even mocked on Saturday Night Live, and the clip of it is pretty cringe. I watched
Saturday Night Live can be very cringe.
But like, some people will be like, say a joke and somebody will be like, too soon. Like, this was literally happening at the same time as the trials were happening. And it was like, it's bad. Like, regardless of how stupid the boys looked in court and like things that you can make fun of, they like, you're making fun of like two people that were murdered. Like, it's just weird. I watched the whole thing and it's just awkward. It's just weird. At one point during the trial, they had their female cousin come up and testify that Lau had actually confided in her as a kid when they were 8, that he was being molested,
that is a lot because, that's what I was going to say is I wonder if they told anyone outside of each other.
But if this is all the same family and they're all like weird, did they pay her to say that? Like, I don't know. Yeah. There's so much things going on that like, can we trust her? Like, who is she? You know what I mean? It could be like she's fine.
I just think that's better than no one speaking to it.
I agree.
Which a lot of times there's a lot of shame around it, so they don't tell anyone.
Yes.
But I feel
like though, if this isn't real, if anybody would like think to have something like that, it'd be them.
Yeah.
Like to think of having,
and
oh,
that's
we need
the problem
somebody.
Is I feel like they have the resources and it seems like they're thinking from different angles.
Yeah.
So it makes it hard to trust them because they feel calculated. Like
exactly.
They feel, It's not that they don't have things to back up. I mean, there's some things their parents did that are very controlling and very like perfectionist and like, so you could see how like it kind of mentally strained them, but also it's like murdering them. Like when they're watching a movie, like, but I don't know.
Very brutally. I don't know. It's just hard with this case. The cousin apparently also said, which, I mean, I get being a little bit weirded out by this, but I don't think it was like, I don't think it's proof of anything. But she said that she remembered when they were younger, like around 12 to 15, that whenever Jose would go out of town, the boys would beg their mom to like sleep in the same bed with their mom so that she wasn't sleeping alone, which, I mean, sure, it's a little bit, maybe a little bit weird as a 15-year-old boy, like, to do that. But, like, I don't think that proves something. But she made it seem like it did.
I think it's...
I don't think that's proof. I think there's lots of families that do weird things.
It's definitely not proof. It's definitely not. Even I wouldn't even classify it as weird, because weird makes it... puts a connotation on it that it doesn't necessarily have.
Yeah.
It's just, if you're talking about a family that there's accusations of sexual abuse or... whatever, it's definitely not something that I would say most 15-year-old boys are probably doing.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't think it's...
It doesn't prove anything for sure. It's just
I don't think it adds to anything.
I think it's interesting. Like the... And it
but also, she made it seem like the it wasn't something where the mom was like, you need to. It was something where the boys asked.
If anything, to me... that doesn't point to her sitting by while they're getting abused. It seems like they're very close to her.
Yeah, right?
But I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert in any of this.
Their friend Craig, who had been talking to the media a lot, had been told to stop talking to the media. So he was now banned from talking to the media. But now he was going to be testifying in court. He testified about how Eric had confessed to the murders 12 days after they happened. He also talked about the screenplay that they had written, which kind of was premeditating the murder, which they actually did not have the screenplay as evidence in court. They just discussed it, but the jury wasn't able to actually read it.
Why? That's such a big thing.
I don't know. They also had the computer expert that wiped the computers come in and testify. He talked about how easy it was being in the house. The coroner showed really graphic pictures of the crime scene to the jury, which definitely made them very emotional, obviously. The defense had tried really hard to get them to not show these photos in court. They thought that they were too graphic, but they went ahead anyway, and they made a big impact. Of course they didn't want them to show it. Yeah, they didn't want it
to see that.
They didn't want it to make it seem like a brutal, like, cold.
But that's what it was.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, of course they don't want them to see it.
Yeah.
One thing that kept being brought up in trial was this movie called The Billionaire Boys Club. This came out just 3 weeks before the murders took place. Dr. Ozeal claimed in court that Eric had mentioned in one of the tapes that was not used in court that this movie inspired the crime because it was so similar to the way that their parents were killed. It was a story about a group of rich boys in Beverly Hills who killed their father for money. Not only that, the characters wore Rolexes and drove a Jeep Wrangler, which is literally what they got. This movie was actually released by Live Entertainment, Jose's company.
Oh, yikes.
Now, they weren't able to play the movie in court, but they were able to bring it up and argue that it could have been inspired by it. Yeah, a lot of things that were, like, very, like, I don't know, helpful, I guess, like, wasn't actually used in court, which was interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know why. The whole trial was very long. It lasted 4.5 months, but it finally came to a close in January of 1994. The jury deliberated for about a month, which is for the first time ever when they...
Yeah, they're taking...
All the ones we've done recently, it's like they deliberated for, you know, 5 minutes. they were actually split by gender. All of the females on the jury wanted to acquit, and all of the men on the jury wanted to convict. They could not come... Which makes sense because the way that defense came was, like, to make them, like, sweet, innocent boys that were, like, wearing these cute sweaters. And it's like the women all probably just felt bad for them. They would not come to a conclusion, so they decided to go with a mistrial. The LA County District Attorney immediately...
You said they were going for death?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, and that's the other thing. I feel like it's I feel like that makes the burden on the jury so much heavier.
Oh, yeah, because you're literally choosing to, like, kill someone.
Yeah. That's tough. I think that's probably why anyone who wasn't willing to acquit, that's probably what it came down to.
Well, and if you have any sense of, like, yeah, if they have been abused their whole lives, like...
Even if you think there, even if there wasn't logic to it.
For sure.
I would have a hard time.
It's a big responsibility.
With death penalty, even if it was they confessed to it and whatever. Like,
I agree.
To me.
I just think death penalty is stupid
because.
You're fighting
fire with fire. Like, how is that?
But that's not helpful in any sense. No. If you want somebody to learn from their mistakes, like, let them rot in jail.
Or even if they don't learn, like, the jury now has to live that for the rest of their life. The person who puts them to death has to live it. Like,
yep.
It's literally just greed of wanting to free up prisons.
Yeah, so because of money. It's just stupid.
There's no benefit to me.
I agree. I think it's stupid. The LA County District Attorney immediately announced that there would be a retrial for both of the boys. The second trial began in October of 1995. This time it was just one jury. It was different because they decided not to allow the media in. It had become way too much of a public circus last time, so they wanted to keep it under wraps.
Yeah.
This time, the judge decided to not allow them to talk so much about the sexual abuse that the boys had endured. Other than that, the arguments that they made were pretty much the same. It was the same trial repeated, which I think is would alter it a lot if their boys are not talking about their sexual abuse, because that's the biggest reason why
you
would
think. Not talking
about
it a lot, yeah. And it makes, yeah. And I do think that can hurt the defense, because now the prosecution kind of knows what they're going to try to say.
Yeah.
And they can almost get ahead of it.
Yeah, I think so too. This time the defense really went after Dr. Ozeal and tried to discredit him as much as possible. They said he was a liar and a cheat and just an overall bad guy. They claimed that he was planning to use these recordings as blackmail, that he was never going to go to the police. He was going to...
It doesn't really matter what his motives were, though. Like, they're confessing...
I think they're I think it's more just to like discredit anything he said as like a witness or like somebody, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That he was going to keep the secret and blackmail the boys, maybe get some money out of them. So when he testified this time, it lasted for 6 days. This led to two of his mistresses filing complaints against him. The state also recommended that he lose his license, obviously. The defense was hoping that this would distract the jury from Eric and Lyle. When Eric testified, it actually lasted several weeks. Apparently, he called his father a killer, said he was very afraid of him, and thought that he would have killed someone if he didn't kill him first. But I love how this time he said he would have killed someone and not him. So, like, he's just trying to paint his dad as this killer guy.
Well, and you didn't kill him.
Yeah.
So some part of you knew that, like...
Yeah, that this was wrong? Like... During the cross-examination, Eric actually was caught in a lie. He said that they had bought pistols for protection 3 years before the murder, but it turned out the store he had claimed to bought them from, it wasn't even the store he had claimed to bought them from, it wasn't even open at the time. So the prosecution was able to ask the jury if he could lie about that, what else is he capable of lying about? That's like such a perfect clutch of like, we caught him in a lie, like what else could he be lying about? The main thing, and that's not like a lie you forget. Like, that's like a clear lie. It's not like I forgot, you know?
Yeah.
The main thing that was different with this trial, though, was Lyle did not testify, which was an interesting move. So this time, the jury deliberated for nearly 3 weeks, and they ended up finding Eric and Lyle guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. Before they were sentenced, they decided they wanted to have their word out to the public, and so they did an interview with Barbara Walters. It's a really famous interview. If you haven't watched it, it's actually pretty interesting. I just thought it was an interesting thing that they decided to do. So the jury ended up deciding that they were not going to move forward with the death penalty because Eric and Lyle had no history of violence, but they completely rejected the idea that this was done in self-defense in any way or that the boys were abused. So that was just completely shut down. Their brothers were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole on July 2nd, 1996. Obviously, one of the most controversial verdicts of all time. When they were heading into the sentencing period, the brothers ended up putting in a request for them to at least be put in the same prison so they could be together, but that was denied. Lyle and Eric were separated and sent to separate prisons.
Well, yeah, I don't think that they do well when they're together, obviously.
No.
Like, keep them separate.
Yeah. On September 10th, 1996, they waved at each other from across the prison courtyard, and that was the last they would see each other for decades, which was obviously very hard on them. They were also considered maximum security prisoners, so they were separated from all the other inmates and spent a lot of time alone. They tried to appeal the outcome, but on February 27th, the California Court of Appeal upheld their convictions. In May of 1998, they tried to get the Supreme Court to review the case, and they declined to do so. They've tried several times to file habeas corpus petitions with the Supreme Court of California, but they've been denied multiple times. 2005 was the last time they were denied, and they've been kind of stuck there ever since. So, since then, Eric and Lau both got married in prison. In 1996, Lau married Anna Erickson, but then in 2001, Erickson. Anna ended up finding out that he had been cheating on her in jail. He was writing to other women, so she divorced him. Then he got married again in 2003 to a woman named Rebecca. Eric married a woman named Tammy in 1999, which the only Tammy I could think of was Ron's Tammy from Parks and Rec. I literally just imagine her. He had been writing to her as pen pals for 6 years before they got married. In 2005, she was interviewed by ABC News. She said that their relationship was something that she's dreamed about for a long time. I never understand, like, prison. I don't get it.
No, that's like a weird savior complex.
It's so weird. In 2005, she even published a book called They Said We'd Never Make It, My Life with Eric Menendez. That's like so like attention seeking.
Is it that hard though when he's stuck in a prison with a bunch of other men? And
there's
not a lot of effort you have to put into that relationship.
I don't know.
I guess you have to not care that he's writing other women, maybe.
Yeah, right. In 2017, they did an interview with People magazine and explained that even though they were in separate prisons, they remained really close. Even though they couldn't see or talk to each other, they even were communicating through their wives. They were sending letters back and forth. They would play chess through their wives, through the letters. But they finally got to see each other again in February of 2018, when Lyle was actually transferred to the same prison that his brother was in.
Oh, Lord.
When they finally got to see each other in prison, it had been 22 years, and people who were there said that they had just hugged each other in silence for minutes. They were both just hysterically crying, and after that, they actually allowed them to have a few hours alone together. At first, they were housed
on privilege.
At first, they were housed in separate areas in the jail, but eventually they moved them into the same unit. So now they get to spend time together every single day.
That's bull.
A lot of their family members still stand by them to this day. Including grandma. They're very happy that they're at least now together. Some family members have even spoken out that they are absolutely sure that Eric and Lyle really did go through years of horrific abuse at the hand of their father. The rest is just how controversial this is, and
people are
still
super
half and half
torn about it. I feel like it's kind of like the hot take now is to be like, no, they deserve to get like put in prison. They murdered people.
Some
like,
people don't think that though. Yeah. Some people still think a lot of people still think they did it. They just think that it was almost like it was self-defense in the sense that they were in like
I just
danger.
Think there's not really a shred of like it's so hard to prove, but there's not really anything to point to that kind
of like him being like gonna kill them the next week or something.
Well, there's things to point to him being controlling and at least mentally abusive for sure. And it's just one of those hard things where it's like, but people deal with that all the time.
Well,
and they don't murder people.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I was very emotionally abused growing up. My dad was definitely like wanted me to be a perfectionist, but like only cared so that he could look good in front of his friends. Yeah. But like, I'm not going to go around like kill him and then be like, he was abusive. Like, no.
I was going to compare it to, like, the Gypsy Rose case, where I think a lot of people understand she did this.
Yes.
Like, she needs, there's consequences for that, but I understand how she got there.
Well, and you have
but
actual proof
so
that she was
proof.
Physically, abused.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't.
It's just hard. Like, it's one of those things where it's, you're, like I said, it's one thing to believe someone who's claiming that, absolutely, but it's another thing to believe someone who's a murderer.
Yeah. Like, well, and the other thing that I don't understand, that feels so calculated. And it's like the most obvious thing to me is when you were first like brought into like arrested, you pled non guilty to even committing the crime. The yeah. only reason why you came out and said that your dad was physically abusive was because they literally had proof that said you did it. So yeah. it's like, why didn't you say that before?
To me, like the biggest thing is, and I mean, people react in different ways, but whatever you want to say brought them to that, how they responded after their mm-hmm. parents were dead,
yeah.
whether they did it or not, like that shows a level of like callousness.
Who they are.
And it could be a result of the abuse they endured. Like it could have just kind of numbed them to any emotions.
Yeah.
And it's just, I can see both sides of it. Like I don't really have.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I think that they absolutely should have like murdered their parents and like, or oh my gosh, they should be on death row. Like I don't have like a
no, but yeah, it's just,
I feel like it's kind of weird to look at this case and 100% be like, this is exactly what my take on it is.
No,
it is very
no, yeah,
and you don't know, you don't have all the information. So
my stance is like, regardless if they were abused or not, they still murdered someone. So right. the point is, if we're in court saying do they go to jail or not go to jail, it's right. like
justice,
they still
system.
Killed
and
someone.
It's the same with Gypsy Rose. Like,
yeah,
you still,
it sucks, but
yes, like, and as awful as things are, like if everyone did that when they were, you know,
yeah.
dealing with stuff like that, like
yeah,
that would be a problem. There's
which
a
is
lot
why
of people.
I think they like specifically chose the word self-defense, because if they were like,
yeah, but self-defense is so specific.
That's what I'm saying, though. That's the only thing they think. If I'm them, the only way that you could potentially get out of this completely is by saying it's self-defense.
It would be like more classified as trauma response. Like you're building up trauma over time.
But that could still be like, you could still go to jail for that.
You absolutely can go to jail, but it more explains how someone got there. And I think it gives you maybe a little bit of a reduced sentence.
Sure.
Where it's like, okay.
I'm not surprised,
though.
These
things are compounding on top of each other and it's just a reaction. But a lot of trauma response is not something that's premeditated, planned,
laid out. And it's like their background and their sense of, they get everything handed to them like on a plate. They always like, they're able to get past anything. Like it's not surprising to me that they would claim something like self-defense just so they could get out of everything completely. Like it doesn't surprise me that they would do that.
They probably thought they would.
I'm sure well that's why they walked into the courtroom the first day completely confident.
Yeah
That's very controversial.
I'm gonna sit right in the middle of this one and not take a side.
Well, that is a story about the Menendez brothers.
Email us if you have an opinion on it.
Yeah.
I'd love to know
I'm
why.
I'm interested. Yeah. And next week.
Shotofcrime@gmail.com.
Yes. Yep. Email us there. Next week you'll hear from Ash and her story. Yep. And yeah.
No producer notes because it's just us.
Yeah. Sad.
Email us your producer notes.
There you go. You can be our producer.
You can be like, here's why self-defense is not whatever. All right. Yeah. See you guys next week. Listen. What is our stance? Talk to you guys next week.
There you go. Yeah.
What
we're talking
we'll be
to
doing,
you.
And you'll be listening.
Yes. All right. Bye.